and I think that that's poor precedent. So
okay,
that's my
that's
recommendation is to approve.
Well, yeah, just a good explanation.
Okay,
just what I needed. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to open up the public hearing now and call on the first one who signed up, Philip Mock.
Right. Good evening, Assembly members. I appreciate your time and the ability to come forward today in regard to this rezone ordinance. As you know, my name is Philip Mock, co-owner of this property, but also a resident of Wrangell at 306 Mission Street. I have applied for the rezone for light industrial with the plans to build a self-storage facility there. The initial plans and layout have been provided to Kim, and hopefully that made it into your packet. Mm-hmm. The rezoning would be consistent with the character of the immediate area around the Zemovia Highway there. That area contains parcels that are contractually rezoned, as Mason has mentioned. In close proximity, there's also the public utility industrial parcels, the Bloom Trailer Park, commercial parcels, such as TK's Market, WCA's office, and maintenance or transportation building, as well as business just south of there, right next to the trailer park. Talked a few times with Kate and appreciate her help. She's shared the city's 2012 growth plan, which might be included as well, showing the long-term plan of that area was residential. But that plan was from 2012, and so that's over 10 years ago, and it is clear that the city's demand for light industrial has definitely increased and grown. This area is a great opportunity to grow the city's economy, specifically based on its locations near to town as well as the harbors. With our intended use, we're intending to use it for a professionally operated and enclosed self-storage, not a storage yard that would have things outside, but professional buildings. And rezoning would not negatively impact that neighborhood. Our ultimate goal is to run that as a clean and quiet storage area, with at the same time, you know, really placing the importance of being good neighbors with those around us. We've had many conversations with many in the community, as well as personally, trying to find space for storing items, and it's just very hard to do near town. So we're confident that this venture has a potential to be a good investment into the community and provide additional income to the borough with our investments as well as additional tax. So I want to thank you for your time and consideration.
Just one question, if I may. No outside storage?
That is not the plan.
Nothing will be stored outside?
That is not the plan, yes. Right now, everything would be, we'd start with one single building and storage inside, correct.
Okay, do you have a question?
Just one question, thank you, Madam Mayor. Do you plan on having units big enough to store boats in?
It is in the plan, yes, currently.
That's what I thought I read.
Yeah. So there are units that are smaller and more affordable for just personal items,
right?
As well as ones that are for boats and RVs, things like that.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Mock. Right. Next up, John Esther. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
Assembly members, my name is John Esther. I'm co-owner of 1054 Zemovia Highway, my business partner, Mr. Phil over there. We've petitioned to rezone the lot for on mile one of Zemovia Highway. We are petitioning to rezone the lot from single family to light industrial and hope to open up and operate a self-storage yard and offer self-storage units, enclosed boat and RV storage. Our lot is currently located in a mixed-use area. When researching business opportunities in town and eventually purchasing the property, we learned that the lots in close proximity were contractually rezoned light industrial, exact same purpose as ours. We have already had site plans made, which we've included for you. The final plans show three metal buildings. We would start with one building as we can generate income and afford it. We expand. Plans include locking gates, security lighting, cameras, so we can monitor. The rezoning of this property would allow us to reinvest into the long-term growth of the community and borough through sales tax as well as property tax. As the city opens new land for residential development, such as the Aldertop Village subdivision, the storage will allow residents to the opportunity for safe storage of personal items near town and the harbors. Overall, we hope to add economic growth to the town and provide service for those who are currently looking for self-storage.
Thank you. Bruce Smith.
All right. Thank you here. Bruce Smith. I own the property just adjacent to this one, 1036 Zamovia Highway. Anyways, my thing here is that I oppose the request to change the underlying zone from single-family resident to light industrial. There are two lots in this area that show as light industrial on the maps, as has been explained previously here. However, they are really a single-family resident zone with a contract zone for one specific light industrial activity being allowed. Changing the actual zone from light industrial without a contract zone limitation would not limit the owner to one specific activity and would open up the path for any number of possible activities that are not friendly to a single-family residence neighborhood. An open light industrial zone to a residential area could lead to problems, not necessarily with the current owner and his plan, but maybe with the future owners having different plans. By changing the zone to a light industrial, you lose any controls and safeguards that a contract zone would provide to the neighboring residents. I oppose the change to light industrial. If the council ultimately decides that the enclosed storage project will be permitted to happen, I would request that activity to be allowed only as recommended by the Economic Development Director's report, that being with a contract zone having rules and safeguards consistent with the other two contract zones in this area. Kate Thomas's June 13th staff report, which is included in your packet, did a decent job of explaining why a contract zone is more appropriate within a residential area rather than having a full change to light industrial. So those are my general comments here.
Okay. Are there any questions? I know I had one, and I'm trying to find it, Bruce, but there were some conditions. For instance, operation between 10 p.m. and 7 a.m. Lighting should be angled downward, not to disturb the other residences. And then a vegetated buffer of at least 25 feet. Are those acceptable conditions for you if it were to go to a contract zone?
Right, those are the correct. That's the current conditions of the other two contract zones in place. Yeah, and so that seems to work. The issue is not, if you were to zone it as light industrial, that may not apply.
Okay. Any operation that's sanctioned under light industrial would be allowable.
Right. I could have a mechanic shop buzzing next door.
Yeah. Okay. I understand. Thank you.
Yeah.
And Terry Hansen, would you like to add anything?
I would. So Terry Hansen, planning and zoning for the last 23 years for the city of Wrangell. Those contract zones, they're an odd duck.
Mm-hmm.
But planning and zoning's idea behind them was to make a buffer, a very strict buffer, between a trailer park and residential. I live next to a trailer park. It's not nice. So on the other side, you already had the light industrial with Clinkett and Haida, and then or WCA, and then they wanted to put a shop there to house their equipment. Another very low impact buffer between the mini mart, the hospital, all the other industrial type things that were happening. So basically, when we did these contract zones, it was to buffer both sides of a residential area. It wasn't to spot zone. It wasn't to create an area that You can just willy-nilly have a house over here and a shop over here and a storage over here. That never works. It never works. In 23 years on planning and zoning, whenever you start to get overly mixed uses, it just backfires on the people surrounding it. So, you know, you may have, you have two residentials and then you would have a storage unit at this point, but who's to say what that's going to be in 20 years? We won't be looking at it because we'll have moved on or done whatever. But the people, the resident you'd have on this side and the resident you'd have on this side, they're going to have to deal with our decision today. And as planning and zoning chairman, I feel safe to say that we really took into consideration our decision on both the contract zones and the denial for another industrial in the middle of a residential neighborhood. And the city has seen that light industrial, even in the light industrial part, the conflict that it's had with the people that live up on the hill. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's been an ongoing battle for years. Not so much lately, because I think they all gave up. But you've seen it in other areas of town, too. So anyway, as planning and zoning chairman, I'm going to say I would really appreciate that you stand by what our decision was.
I have a question. On the drawings that were furnished to us by Mr. Mock and Esther, they have a 25-foot setback. If that were partially vegetated, which happens in, what, a month, you have alders growing.
Not a problem.
Would that be sufficient, or do they have to have a setback from the buffer zone?
Well, here's your issue is, you know, maybe they've now sold this storage unit, and there's quite a bit of anchorage there. So the next person that owns this has decided that they're going to push back a little bit with their property, and they're going to put in a tire shop, or they're going to put in a small sawmill. That 25 feet does nothing to protect the neighbors on either side from the noise and the everything else that you're going to have. 25 feet is not very big. I mean, my house is wider than 25 feet. You know, when you think about that, sitting in your living room, what is 25 feet? It's not much. And for noise or smell or something else that could be going on there, not that your a new residential neighbor isn't going to be a pain. I mean, you know, there's some neighbors out there you don't want to have, but that's beside the point. It's single-family residential, and that's, you know, what it should remain.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from any of the testimony? And we'll have some experts here to ask.
I may have, but I have just a few additions to add, if you don't mind.
Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing. Close the public hearing, and let's get a motion on the table, please. I'll entertain a motion. We have two readings of this item, so let's tackle this with a motion. Motion should be assembly on page 83.
Move to approve the first reading of ordinance number 1062 and move to a second reading with a public hearing to be held on August 27, 2024.
Second. Okay. Motion by Powell, second by Robbins. All right. Borough manager.
So a couple of things. I'm not as expert as like Gary, just because I'm trying to quickly become one in this category. But when I read the 2018 contract zone agreement for the WCA transportation building, it reads on the premise that we're passing this because it's a good economic development opportunity. Mm-hmm. So that's the precedent, I think, that a contract zone sets. So going back to what we talked about with Mr. Holmquist, our general counsel, we need to get rid of these because you're opening up the opportunity to be discriminatory, I think, on who, okay, you get a contract zone, but you don't because we don't really like what you're doing. That shouldn't be a factor in the decision. And I think this case is about equity for me, and because we've set this precedent, I think the appropriate action would be to continue on with the rezone and then looking at the whole area in its entirety and propose a multi-use zone, because we're already there. Anybody will look at this and say that this is, in its aggregate, a multi-use area. So there's no going back, because we're not going to ask Don Glasner, well, demo your storage, because we're going to bring it back to single-family residential 10 years from now. That's just not going to happen. I don't see a world where that does. So that's a bit something I'd like to express. Another thing that our general counsel described to us today is contract zones are kind of a wonky way of just doing a variance, which is really the appropriate way that the state code points to. And I think that that's what our code needs to be updated, is to have a variance opportunity for these things to be more finite or described and provisions applied. And so that would be the appropriate thing. And I think just generally, our code needs an update. I know that Kate agrees with this. We've looked through a lot of the different zoning codes. And waterfront development, for example, take a walk on Peninsula Ave. You pass a storage building, a shop, a house, an apartment, whatever. And in the zoning code, it says waterfront development shall not have anything other than temporary housing. Is one of its requirements. Well, everybody in waterfront development has permanent houses. That's just stuff. So those types of updates need to happen. So I think for sake of equity, I think it'd be wrong to deny these folks the opportunity to do what they're trying to do, because we've allowed WCA to do it. We've allowed Don Glasner to do it. I think we need to back up and take a whole look at the area. So that's really my piece on it.
And just as a clarification, the two entities that you mentioned, they did not go with the contract zone. They went with a rezone to light industrial.
They went
to a contract zone?
Correct.
Yes. Correct.
Okay, so they're both contract zone. If they give up the property, that zoning does not go with the new owner. Am I correct in that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. So just to be clear, under contract, that land is still currently zoned single-family residential by law and by land development. And there is a contract on that property that allows for restricted uses under the lens of light industrial, but it does not allow for all uses under light industrial. That's the end of the statement.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Assembly. Questions, comments? Assembly Member Dalrymple.
Madam Mayor, I guess back to the administrator's kind of request or point and how we get there, just in the technicality, how would we would just bypass on this ordinance outside of the hearing and then move to a rezone of the whole area as a new proposal? Is that where we're going? Or are we just doing each little parcel here?
So my recommendation would be to pass this as presented, go on to a second reading, pass that, but then meanwhile have planning and zoning take a look at the whole area to propose a multi-use plan for what's presented to you on page 90.
Thank you.
Could I make a comment?
I'll permit it.
Okay.
Please, just very quickly.
I will make it very quick, yes. My issue with what you're proposing to do is that by allowing this and then addressing it, you've already gone beyond addressing it appropriately for the zoning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that, I mean, I can't say that the contract zones were a good precedent to set, but there was a reason for them. And it specifically was to protect the residential in the middle. It was not to put something else industrial with no control over how it's done in the middle of a residential. And since it has already been sold part of it as residential, I don't think that you can go back now and start changing what that is. I mean, that precedence has also already been set, if you want to look at it as a setting of a precedent. So
a follow-up would be on that. Then these contract zones, we're being told by our legal crew we should get rid of them because they're bad news and you're going to get sued eventually. That's what we got told, right? because you open the borough up to liability, because you can be discriminatory towards who gets what. And yes, it does carry the initial zoning of origin, single-family residential. So, for example, WCA lot's still single-family residential, but they built a transportation facility, and in fact, it's like industrial, but under certain parameters. So my question then to planning zoning, because I don't have this precedent, you had a commercial property, the headquarters of WCA, and then was the thought to extend the buffer? Because you already had a buffer from, because the WCA lot in 2018 would have been single family residential, so are we just extend, you know, it just gets dicey to me. I don't, maybe you have that context to share, I'm not.
Well, I'd have to go back and read all the minutes and all the discussion that was there, but it was that they had the adjoining property, and it was supposed to be just, and it is, an enclosed area for their equipment. So that's what it is. It's not like a facility that's got a bunch of mechanics and all these things running in it. It's an enclosed storage for their future equipment. And so, yes, we did allow that. And they were accessing it through their existing property.
Mm-hmm. And so you have a lot of experience. So when you look at this in the packet, does that look like a spot zoned area to you?
And the reason I say that is because I know what our intention was. And maybe that's what makes it different. Me looking at it than you looking at it is because I know what our intention was when it was created. And I have to say, Carol Rushmore was not a fan of what we did and actually recommended against it. So, but we felt, truthfully, we felt that a well-kept, limited storage facility was more friendly to a residential, single-family residential lot than Panhandle Trailer Court. And we really felt that a enclosed storage for WCA was a buffer between the other industrial. And then keeping, kind of in enveloping that nice little residential area that was in the middle. And I mean, and we have more industrial lots coming open. It's not like there isn't any place to put it somewhere else. But as we all know, residential is pretty tight too. So,
thank you. Any other comments? Assemblymember Morrison.
So, if I'm correct, isn't there a storage facility right next to Panhandle, right north of it?
Yep, that's that light gray one. Where it meets the orange.
So
yep.
What is that zone as?
Well, it is. In a sense, single family residential because you still carry it, but because it has a contract zone, it's got light industrial permissions, not in complete entirety, but under certain parameters.
So why don't we do variances?
We would have to substantially change our code, and that's what I'm recommending the planning and zoning look at, is either develop a multi-use code that would allow for this whole area to be consistent, and not in jeopardy of being spot zoned, or provide a variance process to what Title 29 of the state says, and not do this wonky contract zone that's favorable in court is what is widely accepted.
Yeah, and I can see that. Kate Thomas, our planning and zoning director, is there any instance where you grant a light industrial with conditions that live from owner to owner? And I'm specifically thinking of the three conditions that we have before us.
So one, I think it's important to remember that light industrial, regardless of the type of use that they're conducting on the parcel, if it is zoned light industrial, those buffers are required. It doesn't necessarily equate to the conditions related to lighting or noise, for that matter, but just the vegetative buffer along the property lines. Whether you contract zone it or rezone it entirely, it's a legislative matter, so it's, you know, your prerogative to be able to do that. In saying that, it would not be typical and I don't have a case that I could give you or reference as an example, but if you rezone it entirely, you are allowing the maximum degree of industrial use under the current code provisions that we have. The only way for you to truly restrict it would be under a contract. And that was something that we discussed and considered, and it is unusual to see contracts applied to properties. And, you know, in this case, we allowed for it because our code provisions provide it, and it's not illegal to do it, but there are implications of liability, and depending on the intent and background and other variables, it may not stand up in the court of law. There are more cases where it does not than it does, based on, you know, our reference and research throughout the past few days. You know, I would say if we were to bring this back to the commission and we were to look at this, I would anticipate a three-part revision to the code, which would include an area for mixed use and establishing terms for that. Typically under mixed use, you would see a predominantly residential area that allows for some type of commercial or light industrial use, but it would be very specific, like a residential area with a grocery store or a retail store, but wouldn't allow for all types of commercial use, or the reverse, where it would be a heavy commercial or light industrial area where it would have also residential allowances. So mixed use, and then we would consider eliminating the contract zone provision and then adding language in the variance to allow for uses. Typically, variances under our code provisions really deal with the physical characteristics and your inability to build out your property within those confines. As an example, setbacks. That is the most common variance that we grant, where you build your house or dwelling or infrastructure closer to the property line than is what the code dictates.
Okay.
One other thing I would add, Patty, is this came in 1985, I think, is when it entered in our code. And it appears to me this was like, this is brought forward as a loophole to get around the zoning requirements, when in fact the proper way to do it would have been the variances. And the fact that it's only been used a couple times in 30 years would be concerning precedent to me, right? So I would continue to move through with getting rid of the contract zones even that exist today and providing for appropriate zone requirements for them. So I think that's kind of a testament to, I don't know if it was some good old boy stuff going back in the 1980s or something, but that's what vibe I'm getting out of this.
This area clearly is mixed zone. I mean, it is. You've got a mishmash of activities in this area. So if we did a code revision, and I don't want to go too far into that because we need to settle this, but properties would be grandfathered that are currently here would be grandfathered, those activities.
They would not be able, they would be considered non-conforming, which is the term or definition, and they would, yes, in essence, be grandfathered in, but they would not be able to further development of the previous land designation. So you wouldn't be able to build out more warehouses on your previous light industrial lot. You would be restricted to that, what exists under the new terms.
Okay. I can see both sides of this issue. And I still think there must be some mechanism, if you do zone it light industrial, to put conditions on it. I mean, that lives with the property. And the conditions, the three conditions that were mentioned, are pretty reasonable.
The best way to do that would be to review the standards of your district and update those to be to the modern liking of the commission and the people and the assembly.
So we couldn't do it on the purchase or the activity of just one lot that we're considering.
I think you would be getting yourself into a much more sticky-wicky situation.
A legal liability situation. Yeah.
Variances are typically are very difficult to obtain. The criteria for approval is such that it would be difficult. But it's something that we can look at, and there are great comparisons, specifically Homer, Alaska. They have had a lot of planning and zoning cases and legal issues over the last 30, 40 years. So they've really leveled up their game, so to speak.
Okay. Well, I live in a mixed zone. It may not be officially zoned, but multifamily, single residential, and industrial. So I'm smack dab in the middle. So I understand both sides. Borough clerk?
So just for the assembly and the public, looking in our code under light industrial, the principal uses permitted, would you like me to state what those are?
Yeah, that would be helpful.
Transportation and transshipment facilities, warehouse and storage, manufacturing, fabrication, assembling and storage of light industrial nature, meeting the development requirements stated under this chapter, auto repair and subordinate or incidental retail sale of supplies or parts.
Okay. Assembly Member Powell.
Can we make a new zone?
That's what I would be suggesting to planning and zoning to do.
I mean, can we say that we're going to zone this as storage only, this area?
There are one, we don't have a zoning district established for that, but we could consider establishing another district, which we've done before. We did that for Aldertop, single family, medium density. We could establish a mixed use area that had confines, property boundaries or land boundaries of that, and apply them to specific areas. The Rengel town site really is in the immediate downtown area, including Church Street up to essentially the harbor, does have some variation. But if you look at the code, there are single family conditional uses or accessory uses that are allowable there, whether that's, you know, a school building, a park building, a hospital, etc. So, you know, we discussed today whether you guys, the recommendation would be to proceed. You know, a zone change can be initiated three ways: by the assembly, by the commission, or by petition of a private party or a group of parties together. So it would be your prerogative to, you know, task us with the public process of reviewing that area, establishing code provisions, and engaging the public in that dialogue further so that we do get it right in the end. I do understand the predicament we're in. I did not recommend a rezone. Include a recommended motion to consider the contract zone, as had happened in the other areas. Now, you know, I think at this point we certainly need to look at this more closely, regardless of the decision of the assembly.
Assembly Member Powell.
So all the court cases I can find on contract zoning, I'll have to agree with our city manager, that's a big no-no. I don't know how that ever got by us, because I was sitting on the assembly when we did the contract zoning, and we approved the contract zoning. And reading everything I can read on it, I think we kind of made a mistake on that, and I think we need to relook at that and maybe reduce those zones and not do contract zoning. Because the contract zoning, to me, looks like a big court battle to me. So if we're going to do something with this property, I would say that this comes back and this is a multi-use property. You can see that. There's one other thing I have is on, you said that the, WCA bought that one property of Torgerson's, mm-hmm. and it says multifamily. All I can find out is that it's single family, except for the new map that you guys put out. And I was wondering when that got changed from single family to multifamily. Because Mr. Smith's property is single family, which that was subdivided. So I don't understand how that got multifamily and Mr. Smith's is single family.
I think it's a mistake.
It may be.
Okay, so it's single family residential for that. Okay. So, and then I'm going to say another thing is that we have
in that instance, I mean, we have a lot of storage stuff on that property now. That's a single family residential. I don't see where we're actually doing anything with our codes anyways. Okay, we don't enforce them. I mean, it's a fact of life. We just don't have we can't have 100 people running around doing everything at one, well, one person doing 100 things. I understand that. I would like to task the city manager and you guys to relook at this property and bring it back to us with multi-use, okay? Whether we come up with variances and we do the 20, because Glassner's property, if I remember right, we put 25-foot buffers all around his property. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think there's a 25-foot buffer even against the light industrial, which is the Panhandle Trailer Court, which I thought was kind of crazy because you got, but I think there is. I think we have buffers all the way around Glassner's property.
Yes.
And that was contract zoning. So we need to look at his zoning, the contract zoning, and the WCA's contract zoning, and come up with another zone that we can change this to where we don't find ourselves in the court.
Kate, would you please inform Assemblymember Powell of the standards of light industrial? You kind of mentioned that there's a buffer that's required, there's setbacks required. So those things are already required under the existing zoning code for light industrial.
And that
the
would
the only
be-
thing that's not required is that I have to agree. If I had a house next to this,
yeah,
I would have to agree that that's great. I understand that. But if they sell that property 5 years from now and somebody wants to put a complete shop in there and start building cars or boats or anything like that, under light industrial, they could do that. And that's why I'm asking if there's a way to zone something that will still get us where we want to be. And 10 years from now, someone can't go in there and start building cars or boats or fiberglass shop or anything else. I don't care what it would be.
To answer Mason's question, buffers are required as a standard in light industrial. So anytime you have light industrial abutting a residential, whether that's multifamily, single family, or otherwise, those buffers are required. Which is probably why that was put into the contract zone, because that's sort of a minimum standard, if you will. In saying all of that, we certainly can look at this area. I would consider a tract of land, a conglomerate of parcels of property. It would be my recommendation, and would have to lean on the commission for it, that it would be a predominantly residential area with certain types of light industrial or light commercial uses allowed, which would kind of be synergetic with what's already occurring to a certain degree in that area. So, and that would allow us to engage the individual property owners on the other side of the street, north and south in the area, and really get the public process deployed here, which I think is important. Land ownership is a big part of being American, and we certainly want to do what we want with the property we own, but we also want to make sure that we're being fair and equitable across the board.
And I'm glad you stated that, because we need to be fair to Mr. Mock and Mr. Esther. There is a storage facility already in the area. They would be under the assumption that their storage area should be allowed as well. So I would like assembly, how quickly could planning and zoning meet and come up with another zone? I was trying the light industrial zone with conditions, but if it demands another zone, with the conditions that are acceptable to Mr. Smith, let's see if we can get this thing done. And
just mapping out the timeline in my mind.
I'm going to take that one for a bit. Something like that, to do it right, it's going to take months.
Yeah.
Months and months and months. And I think that when you look here, the equitable thing to do is not preclude the development that you've afforded to these other parties because you thought it was a good idea. So
yeah.
WCA, for example, you read through the contract zone, oh, it's a great thing to have a transportation warehouse because that's a great benefit for the borough. And Don Glassner, you too, but not these guys. So in terms of equity, that just seems so wrong to me. And if we're going to preclude development for months, if not, you know, years to get it right, that's just...
Okay, how about this approach? Zone it light industrial with variances. But variances, isn't there another term? Variances allow you to get away with something. I want to put conditions on it. So the variance is not the right term.
Every now and again, if I may, I try to simplify things when we get into the weeds on issues. Right now, we have a request to rezone the property entirely. No questions asked, no conditions, no nothing. That is the item on the table.
And that's kind of the problem.
And I think in saying all of that, whether you voted in favor of the motion or against the motion, we can still go back and study this issue more deeply and have come forward with a recommendation and options to you all with the backing and public engagement from the property owners in the surrounding area.
Okay, so if we pass the motion as presented, we have another hearing in August, and we can have recommendations from you at that time.
We have
to further refine the motion.
Are you asking of the commission to provide a recommended amendment to the motion that's before you, or to provide a recommendation as to how to rezone that area?
Well, maybe it's even simpler. Why can't the assembly, as the governing body, amend the motion to include the conditions and for storage purposes only? Why couldn't we do that? And that would be memorialized?
That's essentially a contract zone. You are allowing, you are rezoning it, but not really. Like, if you're rezoning it, you have to rezone it under the conditions and terms of the code as it is.
But in my vision, it would not be a contract zone because it would reside with the governing body and it would live with that property.
I don't...
So is there some way? We should be able... There is a solution, and I'm trying to get at that.
I kind of have a thought. If we task the Planning and Zoning Commission to look at a multi-use code change or look at the variances, I think those are both avenues. These guys aren't going to develop a Don Glasner-type storage facility in the next 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, probably, if they can even find a contractor. So it's probably an appropriate timeline. By the time that they can move forward with their development, the Planning and Zoning will come back and say, here's our multi-use residential code, or here's our multi-use light industrial code. And I would just also say that the standards are pretty clear. Air, land, and water quality, volatile product storage, noise, building height, setbacks, drainage, off-street parking, buffers, signs, animal establishments. So there's protections inherently, but I also understand the concern that, you know, nobody wants a lumber mill next to them waking up to that at 7 a.m. So you're almost like racing, the Planning and Zoning Commission would be racing them to, that might be a solution.
All right, so essentially amend the motion and kick it back to Planning and Zoning.
Somebody would, if you wanted to do that, then somebody would just make a motion to defer it to the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Yeah, we could do that.
I would just say approve it and then amend, you know, you can amend it to say, yes, approve a contingent on Planning and Zoning also working on it. You don't even have, you could just task Planning and Zoning to do that anyway, so you don't have to put that in the motion.
If you're going to do that, then you'd want to postpone this because you can't just say approve it because it's going to go on the next meeting.
Yeah, that would be too vague.
Right.
And it will go on. Assembly Member
Powell? There's no reason why we can't approve this to go to a second reading. if we approve this and we direct the city manager to look at this with the planning and zoning to see if they can come back with something that we are going to go forward with, and then we can either deny the zone next reading or approve it with what we know later on. We don't really need the planning and zoning to approve the whole thing, like in meetings, if we can come up with an idea of what we're looking at. That's, do you see what I'm saying? I mean, if we can come up with an idea of what we're looking at doing, you're still going to shoot this thing down in the next reading, because we're not, if we don't come up with it by then anyways, I just don't see why we would shoot this down right now, because we're going to come into another reading anyways, which would be, there might be a lot more to this than then.
But yeah, there's some technicality. If you shoot something down, you may not be able to bring it back.
Exactly.
Assembly member DeBoard.
Is the second reading required to be at the next meeting?
No.
So could we move the date out 6 months, 8 months, something of that nature?
You could just say...
that's a good idea.
Amendment to just say when ready, you know.
Second reading.
Yeah, when
ready.
Staff is ready to bring it back. It doesn't have to come back at the next meeting.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Or it could just be under. I could just put it in there that it was a consensus.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how about that, Assembly? All right. Does everyone understand? If you vote yes, you're approving the rezoning to light industrial. And the second reading will come back when all of our questions have been answered by planning and zoning. Assembly Member DeBoard.
I still have one thing I want to kind of talk about before we end up voting. But since we're talking about fairness and equity here, and I understand that, but I think we kind of need to look at Mr. Smith's predicament, that he bought a single family home lot. He put his single family home on that lot, knowing that the place next door to him was a single family lot. So, I mean, that's, I kind of see both sides. I would really hate to have some place come in right next to me and that be rezoned and changed. There's a lot right behind me that could happen to. I would hate that. And I'd also argue it would probably increase the value of the proposed industrial lot and also potentially decreasing the value of Mr. Smith's lot. So I think fairness and equity, we need to kind of look at both sides. And if there wasn't a neighbor here that was saying, you know, this, I don't want this, it wouldn't really bother me. But we have somebody who, you know, and this was bought knowing, this proposed industrial lot was bought knowing that it was a single family, zoned single family at the time of purchase. So it's been a lot of kind of talk on one side. I just kind of want to make sure we look at the other side as well.
Correct. Thank you. Any questions on the vote? Everyone understand the motion? All right, poll vote, please.
Assembly members Audison?
Yes.
Dalrymple?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
DeBoard?
No.
Robbins?
No.
Morrison?
Yes.
And Mayor Gilbert?
Yes. Thank you, Assembly. Item B, Ordinance Number 1058 of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, amending and repealing, replacing certain sections of Chapter 2.24, absentee voting to allow for early voting and electronic voting in the Wrangell Municipal Code. And Assembly, this is on page 106. Yes, it is a public hearing. I have an administrative report. Thank you.
Sorry. I'm going to kick this over report. To our borough clerk, who's our election specialist.
Yep. So, again, this item would essentially change our code. So that making changes to early voting to essentially have the clerk's office run like it does on election day, making the process more seamless and transparent, also by adding voting by email during absentee voting. For ease of voting and adding security measures.
Thank you. I'll open up the public hearing. Is there any testimony on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing and entertain a motion.
Move to approve Ordinance 1058.
Second.
Okay, motion by Morrison, second by Audison. Discussion. This is a nice addition. Benefit for the for the community. All right, hearing none, poll vote, please.
Yes, Assembly Members Dalrymple?
Yes.
Howe?
Yes.
DeBoard?
Yes.
Robbins?
Yes.
Morrison?
Yes.
Otteson?
Yes.
And Mayor Gilbert?
Yes. Item 11C, Resolution Number 07-24-1873 of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, approving the amended fee and rate schedule for the Harbor and Port Facilities Department and providing for an effective date. I'll entertain administrative report, please.
So this is something the Assembly had asked us to do on the June 25th meeting, which is bring back a rate decrease for the harbor. We realize it's a difficult time for charter operators, commercial fishermen this time of year, so we actually build out accordingly based on that recommendation from the Assembly. So this would just be retroing it to the last rate increase, which was effective July 1st. So this accounts for a 3% reduction in the fee and rate schedule for annual moorage, so people that stick around all year long. And it also provides an adjustment for the cruise ship water rate. So we sprung out an increase on the cruise ship water at the last minute, and you know, after talking with representatives from Cruise Line Agency of Alaska, we found that to be a bit disingenuous, so we should probably give them more notice. So we'd like to revert it back to what it was prior to the July 1st change and address that back in September with all our visitor rates. So what's presented is essentially what was there before in FY24.
Thank you. Is there any, I'll open up the public hearing, is there any testimony on this item?
It's a rate decrease.
Right, decrease. Okay, hearing none, I'll close the public hearing. Motion, please.
Move to approve resolution number 07-24-1873.
Second.
Okay, motion by Morrison, second by Robbins. I feel okay with the rate decrease because the Port Commission has been very diligent and every year increasing mortgage rates to keep up with inflation. They've done better in many cases than the Assembly has mm-hmm. over the years. So give them a break for this year. All right, any other questions, Assembly Member Dalrymple?
Madam Mayor, in light of decreases, I guess I brought up, I don't know, maybe even a year ago now, the what I view as an error in the launch fees. And Kim did some research, excuse my voice here, but Kim did some research for me on the progression of this. And what we found was in April of 21, there was a statement of fees in the fee schedule that if a boat is being launched, which has purchased a stall, a reserve stall,
yeah.
there is no additional launch fee. Basically, it comes with
the
mortgage itself. And I was pretty careful in looking at these fees because they're pretty sensitive to me and the most people that I talk to. And so that one got away because in March of 22, without I could not find, and I don't think Kim could find, where this was identified, this change, where it was clearly identified because it was done holistically in the mm-hmm. whole fee schedule, that statement was dropped. It's gone. And then there is just a pure fee here in April 22 with a stall that has a fee, launch fee in addition to that. And then continuing on this year in January, that continues, that there's a flat fee also with that stall as a separate item, which is increasing as well. And at the time I was told, well, we'll reassess that the next time we look at the fees. Well, maybe that time is now. So I'm wondering if I can amend this motion to include putting that original statement in there about the boat being launched if there is a reserve stall that no fee is assessed.
Well, I believe it's so different from what we're discussing here that I would suggest, and I'll refer to the clerk, but I would suggest you bring it back as an item at our next agenda, our next meeting. Would that be proper?
I think it would be allowed because it's less. We're not doing more. We're not in, including a fee or anything. We're taking away.
Okay, so to incorporate, to roll in the launch fee?
We can amend the resolution to add that in there.
Okay, all right. I thought it would be very different. Okay, so...
Clerk Lane, if you could assist me in that motion or the amendment to the motion.
Let me see.
Well, you can. Yes.
I would just say to amend the resolution to is it in here? Sorry.
So we're looking at the launch ramp. This is on 119, Kim?
Yeah. 119.
And Bob, your intention is to...
Go back to the original language prior to our fee changes, where if a boat is being launched, has a reserve stall, there is no fee assessed.
Okay.
Some similar.
To amend the resolution to remove the flat fee amount.
If the boat has a reserve stall.
From the annual permit with stall.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
All right, did everybody hear the amended motion? I need a second.
Second.
Okay, Otteson seconds. Assemblymember Powell.
When I did the 3% decrease and asked Assembly to look at that, I'd already talked to the Harbor Master and to our city manager, and I'd like to hear from our Harbor Master on this. See what he thinks about what we're about ready to do.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Miller, Harbor Master.
So I don't know that it was ever free. It was half. It's been a half rate for as long as I can remember on if you had a stall. So I need to take that into consideration as well. We probably need to check our ordinances in Title 14 and double check to make sure that there's not a reference to this actually in there as well. I know we were working on it with the Port Commission as well to restructure that because there's no place else in Southeast Alaska that gives away free permits.
Okay.
So,
Assemblymember Powell.
So under what Bob just gave me here, WMC 14.07.030, it does state if the boat being launched has a stall, there is no fee assessed.
Correct. I think that is correct as of right now, but we will be bringing this back with the Port Commission because they wanted it changed as well. So I just need to make sure.
So basically right now we have two things going on contradicting what...
That's why the Port Commission we've been working on it with them to get it cleaned up because there's been discrepancies between our billing and what our ordinance is telling us.
Because in this one here, it says if the boat being launched has a stall, there is no fee assessed. It doesn't say annual stall. It doesn't say 6 month stall. It doesn't say 1 month stall.
Exactly. So that's confusing portion of what we have. Exactly.
So so technically, right now, if I go get a stall for a month, I don't have to have a launch permit.
You'll get a launch permit, but we won't be able to charge you for it if you go by what that tells you. And that's why Callie has been confused. We've all been confused on the billing with it because the ordinance says one thing and our rate schedule says another thing, and the Port Commission has also questioned it prior to them taking their break, and when we come back we're going to be addressing that.
Okay, I would prefer that we handle this as a separate item, and it sounds like we do need to address it. But the Port Commission doesn't meet in the summer. When's the next?
September probably September. Will be the first one, yeah.
Okay. Assemblymember Delmer.
Just a process question. Can I remove my amendment?
No, it belongs
already.
Okay. By the I can give consent if you give me consent to remove.
I would like to remove it.
Your amendment? Okay. We'll remove the amendment.
With the understanding that we'll deal with it.
Bring it back. And clerk will memorialize that we wish that to come back to us. Thank you for bringing that up. Any, yeah, that's very confusing. Yeah, very confusing. Any other questions? We're back to the original decrease of 3% on annual mortgage, correct? And the other item just escaped me. There was one other item on that.
The water.
Oh, the water sales to cruise ships, yeah. All right. Does everyone understand the main motion? All right. Poll vote, please.
Yes. Assembly members Powell?
Yes.
DeBoer?
Yes.
Robbins?
Yes.
Morrison?
Yes.
Austin?
Yes.
Dalrymple?
Yes.
And Mayor Gilbert?
Yes. Unfinished business, we have none. And before we start new business, we've been at it 2 hours. Does anyone need a break? Okay, let's take, we will recess till 8:05. That gives you 7 minutes.